This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. Hey everyone, welcome to this special episode of Pop Culture Confidential as we have breaking news. The Writers Guild of America, the WGA, and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, AMPTP, have failed to reach an agreement. Hollywood writers will strike. But I am very pleased to have with me Tom O'Brien, writer and critic who covers film and also a member of the WGA himself. You'll remember that Tom was with me a while back talking about the impending possible strike, and now it's a fact. So Tom is back with us again. Welcome, Tom. Welcome back.
Thanks, Christine. It's great to be back with you.
So we have been following this the past month, and we've kind of seen what direction it's moving. On April 17th, WGA members overwhelmingly approved a strike. I mean, they 98% gave permission to the Guild. Almost about 12,000 television and movie writers gave their permission to initiate the strike. We've also been reading that producers have began stockpiling scripts and greenlighting projects, racing to get things into productions. So we've kind of seen that where the winds were blowing. But looking at the reactions this evening and this morning, I'm kind of surprised at how far apart these two seem. Am I getting this right? Am I correct in saying that?
Yes, I think so. This is the negotiations have been going on for several weeks, and they've been very tight-lipped about it. And no going in that neither one of us were in the room, so we really don't know. But things have begun to leak out once the deadline passed. And right now, what the Writers Guild is asking for in raising minimums and guarantees to be able to what they believe to get a fair wage would be an additional $429 million. That would be raising minimum pay across the board and being able for staffs to be created and not just paying people for day work. The studios have responded with what they call a fair offer, and it's a modest minimum in the raise in the minimum pay, which would be $86 million. So we're talking $429 million versus $86 million. And you're right, that is a huge gap and one that I don't think they're going to be able to meet up with quickly.
No, and to put that into sort of an interesting context, the author Mark Harris, who covers Hollywood exquisitely, he wrote a tweet saying that $429 million is the same amount that the Super Mario Bros. Movie earned in a month. So it's not like it's a huge number for the studios, just to put that into context. But let's look at some of the issues that the two main issues the studios have just rejected outright. And one of them is staffing numbers and one is duration of employment. Could you explain that a little bit?
Well, this is largely due to policies put into place by streamers, began by Netflix, but now have been picked up by other streaming services who are making original programming.
Right.
And they have declined to give us a minimum guaranteed number of writers to be on staff. That has been the common way TV shows have been written, for example. For years, you'll have 8 to 10 writers meeting in a room. Over the course of the season, they develop stories, and that keeps the voice of the show consistent all the way through. And it really is key to keeping the creativity up. And not so coincidentally, it helps to give those 8 to 10 writers a guaranteed salary for a year and keeping them from having to take side jobs.
Specifically, since this is about streaming, which means what's happened in the streaming era is that the shows are much shorter. Before, we used to have shows where 24 episodes, 25 episodes went through a year. Now we have 6, 8, 12, which means much shorter work for the writers in general.
And a fewer number of writers. Mm-hmm. So what Netflix developed was something called a mini room, as opposed to a writer's room. And a mini room would be about maybe 4 or 5 writers who get together to write the scripts for this short series of episodes, maybe 6 or 8. And those scripts are written before the show goes into production, or sometimes before the series is even greenlit.
So they can pay them much less. Because this is basically a proof of concept that the Netflix then uses to get in order to get this green light, which many of them aren't green lit. So the writers end up staying in these mini rooms and just doing mini rooms all the time and never getting any actual experience or work on a longer series.
No, I mean, they're really cutting off the development of the next generation of writers because there are so few jobs available. And the fact that these mini rooms are paying bare minimum, even established writers who can command, because of the quality of their work and their success, a lot more, just get minimum wage according to the minimum agreement. And Writers Guild, for example, has estimated that fully half of the writers who are working, and these are just the working writers, half of the who are currently working on series are just getting minimum wage. And you can't support a family on that. No. You can't build a career on that.
This used to be a profession where you could have a middle-class life and live in Hollywood and in LA and work and have a family. And it's become, as many writers were writing today in different tweets I was reading, just a freelance gig job, which you can't survive on. But speaking about, then we have the duration of employment, which means that the WGA wanted a minimum amount of weeks that the writers would be employed. They rejected that outright. And then the other part of the streaming era, which is the residuals, that the residuals getting paid for the show being shown again and again through the years has been a big part of a writer's pensions, many of them. And since the streaming era doesn't work that way, they've been trying to get compensation that would sort of cover that. But that was also rejected, as I can see it, right?
And there's no alternative. I mean, they just don't, they didn't counter at all. In some cases, the writers asked for a certain amount of minimum, and they say, well, we'll agree to take a meeting about it.
Yes, lots of meetings were agreed to, but nothing else.
That's about it. And it doesn't cost them anything to agree to make a meeting. That's not there. They're avoiding the issue. I mean, because budgets are up, profits are up, yet the average salary for a writer has declined in the last 10 years. There's something wrong there, because we are the creators of projects that generate around the world billions of dollars. And we're now, as you said, Christina, having to settle for a gig economy. Well, you get paid for one job, and say if you want a little bit of a rewrite, there's no guaranteed minimum pay for that. You know, streamers are asking you to rewrite for free, and there's no protection for us.
No.
So
rejected the second. So if you have to do rewrites, they're asking writers to do all kinds of tweaks and all kinds of rewrites without any sort of protection for that at all.
No, they did offer a meeting, though, to talk about
it. A meeting, yes. that they've offered in several places, among others, talking about AI, which I thought was also quite scary. The use of artificial intelligence is something that the WGA asked for certain, protections that you couldn't, swap out a writer for AI or use it as your material. But basically, what they got back from their demand was, we reject that, but we will offer a yearly meeting to talk about new technical advances, which in when I'm reading that, it feels like the streamers and the studios really are leaving the door open for AI.
Yeah, I mean, and certainly it may very well be a center of profit for the streamers, and they, you know, they are not closing off the possibility that that may replace writers at some point. And thankfully, the guild has seen, looked ahead and said, no, we have to stop this now. We have to nip this in the bud. The fact that they reject that outright is very disconcerting. It as if the current situation is not bad enough, to be able to be replaced by a computer is just beyond the pale. Can a computer do a rewrite? I think not.
No.
Well,
they're leaving it open if it would. That's what the point, really. I mean,
yeah, so many of these counteroffers that the responses that the studio has is that, okay, we'll give you a little bit more money across the board, but you got to keep in place all the loopholes that we have now that can keep you, you know, keep us from having to pay you what you're worth.
Right. And it feels like the streamers and the studios have been preparing. Netflix Sarandos talked about in their earnings meeting that we have really a whole bunch of stockpiled shows, so you won't be missing anything. We don't want to strike, but we do have enough to show a lot down the line. It felt like he was saying, we're not afraid of this dragging on. It feels like they can go to reality. Most reality producers aren't part of the guild. Do you feel that the studios do have the upper hand, or is it like a tactic, a maneuver? What do you feel compared to 2007 also?
Certainly a streamer like Netflix. I think Ted Sarandos is right. I think they can weather this very nicely because they have so many international productions around the world, and that American audiences through, say, shows like Squid Game have responded to. They can just slap those on and you know, put the Netflix name on them and, you know, pretend like they've been written right here in America. The other thing that something like Netflix and the streamers have, to go back for a second with these mini rooms, if a writer mini room writes six scripts for a particular series and the series doesn't go to air, doesn't get greenlit, Netflix still has those scripts,
mm-hmm.
and they can put those into production.
Boom. Right.
And all of a sudden you've got 20 new shows.
Right. I didn't even think about that. How will the viewer be affected from today on?
Well, you know, you can say goodbye to Saturday Night Live for the season, and probably most of the late night talk shows.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcasts.
Certainly, a lot of the guests will honor the picket line. Who are from AFTRA and other unions. So they will be going to reruns. Scripts for this year are pretty much all written. It will affect, though, writers getting together to plan next season shows. So you will see a delay in season premieres next year. And if the strike lasts as long as I fear it might, we may not get a new season until the end of the year. It takes a lot of preparation to get these shows up and running. And that writers cannot participate in that. Right now it is pencils down, everyone.
Yeah, and, so they can't do anything. They can't write, they can't deliver scripts, they can't negotiate or even discuss projects.
No, so none whatsoever. You know, and anyone who does then becomes subject to expulsion from the guild.
Right. A few things I read about that. One is that the talk show hosts, so Kimmel, Fallon, and as well as the others, are actually paying staff, which is something that Letterman and Leno did in 2007. And that's quite a big chunk that they're quite generous. So that they, I mean, and we're talking about, like, Kimmel has 300 on staff. And most of them are, of course, not writers. It's everyone else who's affected. So they'll keep that payroll going. I also read a tweet from one of the writers on Yellow Jackets. They had gotten to write episode 1 of season 3, which she wrote was a great experience, but then this happened. So that will be put on the shelf. But I think the shows that will be affected most quickly are things like Abbott Elementary, more broadcast, because they have a tighter production schedule. They start writing in May and then they already start shooting in July. So that will probably be impossible to make that happen. But in terms of film, are they're able to start producing as long as no writer is involved? They don't have to do rewrites or anything.
No.
Is that correct?
They can't do it. As a result, you may get some half-assed scripts getting
as made. We did 2007, 2008. Yeah.
Yeah.
The James Bond.
For that. Mm-hmm. I think almost all of the films that will be released in calendar year 2023 are done, at least past the writing stage.
Right.
They may still be in production, but that it probably won't affect our movie schedule for, another 9 to 10 months. But it is going to affect farther down the line. You'll begin to see the effects in 2024, and particularly in 2025, I think. Time lost during the strike to get the scripts down right, to go into production, say, by the end of the year, that's going to delay production, and as a result, it's going to move anticipated films for the next 2 years farther down the line and give us fewer films in theaters.
What happens now, practically? Are they able to talk with each other during the strike, or is it just a waiting game until someone, what actually happens?
Negotiations will pick up. Right now, I think this is kind of a cooling off period. Tuesday morning, when we are discussing this, there is a lot of red tape, paperwork, stuff like that that have to be done. Picketing starts at 1 p.m. Los Angeles time, and that's when you'll see it on the news. I used to do it myself. I know the drill.
They're so well organized. You can see on Twitter, they're telling people where to go, how to stand. There's food. There's all these things that are happening around this that feel, people are really, and lots of allies, as one can see at the moment, that are really saying, I was just reading that Edie Falco was supposed to do some press in New York, and she, for a new series, but she did not want to cross the picket line. So she's not doing that. Things like that, which feels like there's a lot of alliance with this at the moment, at least.
The allies that have voiced their support, we are so grateful to them, because it helps solidify our union. We are all in this together. And I think actors in particular know that they are so dependent on the words that they are given to read to be able to deliver the performances that they're capable of performing, that without the level of quality of the scripts that they are used to, their careers are affected. So their stake is in this getting resolved and having the writers get what they need to get in order to sustain a career, so that instead of having a one-shot or two-shot job, you can have 20, 30, 40 years of writing and continuing to grow and continuing to contribute great work.
Right. Yeah. And I wanted to add on to that, which I've been reading, that the sort of older, more experienced members of the WGA keep repeating that one of the things that they're really afraid of is that the younger, in this sort of freelance, very short amount of time that the younger writers get to be in a writer's room, and some of them are even in writer's room via Zoom for a couple of weeks, they are not getting the experience pre-production, post-production to actually make them one day be able to show run, which is what all, you know, writers, you know, that. And I thought that it's a really nice sentiment that people are saying, we don't want to pull up the ladder behind us. Our point is to get, you know, these young writers, and they are not getting the experience. And it worries me that when they're so far apart in this matter, what do you think? I mean, will, looking at it today, will anyone budge here, and who, what will happen? How long do you see this going? Last time, 2007 was 100 days. 1988 was over 150 days. What do you think?
I think it's going to be closer to 1988, unfortunately. These are basic questions that really need to be answered. Back in 88, it was about the rise of cable TV, if you can believe it. But there were no minimums then. Mm-hmm. And it had to take a 5-month strike in order to get those in place. And the same thing I fear has to happen here. It's a little more difficult here, I'd say, because so many of the streaming services are not, their main concern is not entertainment generation. It's, you know, Apple, Amazon. They have other interests. This is kind of a nice,
they have money coming in from other places. Yeah.
Yes, they have. They're fine. They're going to get money no matter what. So they can afford to hold out. Netflix can afford to hold out because of that backlog of product and availability of international shows. So I think that the streamers in particular are going to be more rigid than the cable networks were years ago. And I that can only prolong this strike. And what it is, the tragedy of all of this is also the ancillary people who are going to be affected.
Yes.
The props guys, the cameramen, they're all out of work. And even people who don't work for the studios, the florists, the prop creators, people who make the show look the way.
Assistants of all kinds, yeah.
Yeah, it is going to be just a big blow to a lot of the economy, particularly in Los Angeles, where so much of the entertainment industry is based and so many ancillary businesses are totally dependent upon shows being in production. So
we can't go back to what TV looked like 15, 20 years ago. I mean, we are in this streaming era. Do you think some things are lost, like writers' rooms with 12, 15 people? Is that something that we won't see again? And, you know, residuals and how things, I mean, that we have to find new ways or...
Something has to be done in order to be able to...
Live as a writer.
Yeah. Live as a writer. Your people are not going to want to do this if they're going to have to live hand to mouth. And even when you're on a show, I've seen anecdotal tweets from writers who, I'm on a successful show and I still have to have outside gigs or non-writing jobs in order for my family to eat or to pay the rent. And these are from writers who are working. And writers who aren't are trying to break in. There's no avenue for them anymore.
No, that's nearly impossible, as it seems, listening to the stories that are coming up.
You know, and that's, you know, it's particularly writers who are young, women writers of color, who have been able to get footholds in the industry, now won't have them, especially, you know, if they are, you know, small staffs, not guaranteed a certain number of weeks employment. It's going to be very difficult for them to get that first job and to be able to get the experience that is going to help to build a generation of writers. They're going to be decimated because of some of the practices here. So we have to put a stop to them.
Seeing how far apart they are, a strike is certainly needed. But do you see that this will be positive outcome for the writers, even through this difficult process?
I think it's going to be extremely painful in the long, in the short run. But I think that the impact on some producers will be such that they may be urged to come to the table with a little more of a reasonable response than, you know, would offer a meeting.
Yeah. Or we'll forget it. We're all AI now.
Yeah, we're all AI now. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. Bye. Hopefully this can help to make it very clear to those powers that be that their bottom line is going to be affected, and the product that they are so proud of is going to be impacted. I don't think it's going to go back to the way it used to be, and we can you know, just kind of wax nostalgic about the good old days, but the new days, what is going to be going forward, has to be fair. And right now, the situation is not fair for the writers and the creators. And unfortunately, I think the audiences are going to be the victims of this in shows not being up to the level of quality they've come to expect.
Yeah. Sort of finally, it seems that you're saying that you think this is going to be a long strike, which would probably then be at around the time that both the DGA and SAG, the Directors Guild and the Screen Actors Guild, they're up for negotiations around June 30th. So does that have an impact that if the writers are still striking and all this, or?
I suspect that may put additional pressure on the studios. If they can get the writers to agree to something that they can live with, it would certainly make the negotiations for the DGA and SAG a lot easier, because I'm not sure they want to go through something like this with every guild. And they will have to. I mean, the directors and the actors are just as determined to get a fair shake, because they see the profits that are being made. And their contracts need to reflect their contribution to the coffers that are going into the producers' pockets.
Tom, is there anything you want to add that I've forgotten or that you've been thinking about?
No, I think, Christina, we've covered a lot. I think we just want to remind people that the cliche of writers sitting by the pool all day is not true. They've got families, they've got bills to pay, but they do it because they love it. And even when you love something, you really, with the amount of work that writers put in, and believe me, long hours are the mainstay for writers, as you know, the compensation has to be fair. And I just don't want it to be cliches of writers and producers. These are people, these are families, they're hurting, and they want to be able to get some fairness in their profession so that they can continue to have and do the work that they love for many years to come.
Yeah, and support their families and their health and everything else fairly. Yeah. For the amount of work they're putting in. Tom, I'm sure we'll have the opportunity to talk about this in a bit. Hopefully, we'll see how long this drags out, but I'll definitely call on you again if we start seeing, you know, something happening or changes, or if it drags on too long. I hope you'll come on again to talk about that.
I'd be happy to. It's always a pleasure. Thanks, Christina.
Thank you so much.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.